This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, whether it's Fresno, California, or Anadarko, Oklahoma, or anywhere in between, there are heroes around you. There are men and women who have done incredible things for the sake of our freedom, and we're fortunate enough to have a woman on the show today. Each week, we visit with veterans from our greatest generation. We want to honor them for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for the freedom we enjoy every day as Americans. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated. We're entertained. I know we will be today. And oftentimes inspired. So I did say women, and there were more than 16 million Americans who served during World War II, almost all of them men. But as you've heard on this show before, there were quite a few women in uniform, whether it be the Army, the Navy, the Air Corps, the WASPs were getting into it, the Coast Guard had the spars, the Navy had the waves, and we have a Navy nurse who we're going to hear from today. But before we get to the Navy days, let's talk about Anadarko, Oklahoma. Peggy Bergthold, 93 years old, lives in Fresno, California, but you grew up in Anadarko. You had a brother and a sister.
Yes.
And where do you fit into that order?
I was the middle.
You're right in the middle.
Yeah. My brother was 6 years older than me, and I was 6 years older than my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of grew up and went off to Wichita, because our Wichita people, and he went through Wichita University, and he went into the Air Force.
All right.
And he was a general. He was in administration.
He was an administrator with at that point, the Army Air Corps.
Yes.
Made it to the rank of general. So you had friends in high places.
I don't know that.
What about your childhood, though? What do you remember about that? Because so many of the people listening were not alive during the Great Depression. They weren't alive during World War II. What was it like in Anadarko in the 30s?
My father built cotton gins throughout Oklahoma and Texas and New Mexico. Okay, he always had a salary coming in, so we didn't really feel the depression. And my mother was an excellent cook and so forth. So in those days, we just didn't feel the depression.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it was there.
And I always enjoy having a female veteran on the show because it's such a different perspective from the male veteran. And it helps young women today realize how different things were 75 years ago. For you, as you're going through school, were you thinking about a career? Because, I mean, so many women at that point maybe didn't even have those ambitions.
No, didn't think it. I just went to school and I finished my degree at Wichita University in the nurses training. And then that was when it was very patriotic to go. And since I was a nurse and everything, as I said, my people thought I should join an army.
Well, what you told me was whatever your family wanted you to do, you always did the exact opposite.
Right.
When did that start? How old were you when you started that pattern?
Oh, that's been with me all my life.
Do you have any other fun examples of that phenomenon?
No.
Before we get to that, though, the decision to join the military, you made the decision to go to nursing school. So you get out of high school in Anadarko, Oklahoma, and you go to this Wesley School of Nursing in Wichita, Kansas. Why did you want to do that? Where did that idea come from?
Well, I don't know. There's something said I wanted to be a nurse, and I went to Wichita, so I joined the Wesley School of Nursing. And it was a good school. And Wesley now is a big place.
And something happened while you were there that changed the world. Do you remember December 7th, 1941?
Oh, sure. You know, yes. Well, December, see, I was out of nurses training, and we were in Vancouver. I had taken a train trip across Canada. And to get back into the United States, it took us 4 days that we were trapped, that we could not get.
So you're in Canada sightseeing. You're out in Western Canada. Do you remember getting the news?
I saw all of this blast and everything, and I thought, what's happening? We found out that we'd been bombed.
What did that mean to you?
Well, I was so young, I didn't really feel any particular way.
But I guess it probably hit you when you couldn't get back across the border that this was a big deal, huh?
That's right.
As America entered the war and as things started to progress, were you starting to think that that might be a good way to use your nursing degree in the military?
Well, I didn't have any choice. My people thought I should join. I walked down to the recruiting court and joined the Navy.
They told you Army and you said, nope, I'm not listening to you.
I like the Navy.
What was it about the Navy? Was it the uniforms?
Anchors Away.
You like their song better?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but I think I liked the uniform and that we didn't have to wear black hose.
Uh-huh. Well, hey, I guess comfort is important and style too.
Yeah.
And I know you're a very stylish woman, even now at 93 years old. That's what they tell me at the Fig Garden Women's Club when I've been over there.
Oh.
But long before you envisioned that or living in Fresno, California, here you are joining the Navy and you've got to make your way from Oklahoma to California.
Yes. My brother drove me out. He was visiting mother on leave and he went to the Navy station at Norman, Oklahoma, and made arrangements for me to enlist in California. So I drove with him. We drove by car from Oklahoma.
Okay.
He put me on the train.
In Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
Got it.
And I was to go to Mare Island Naval Station, and I didn't know where that was. Lord, I was just as ignorant as could be. But anyway, this dear Admiral got these three nurses, and these three nurses took me by the hand. We went into San Francisco. We went out to a Chinese place and ate. Then we took the free Navy base out to Maryland. I would have never made it. I would have still been up there looking around how to get. But anyway, and these three gals carrying my suitcase. Now, our quarters at Maryland was beautiful. We had lovely quarters. And so they got the house mother and got me a bed, and I fell into bed. And the next day, I met the gal who was head of surgery, and she says, I said, yes, I'm just coming into the Navy, and I've had lots of experience, lied like a dog, in surgery. And immediately, I was sent to the operating rooms.
Right then.
Right then.
And how much experience did you have in surgery?
Other than what I'd had in nurse's training.
Not much.
No. But you see, the corpsman did the work, and we supervised. I had dirty surgery, and then I had three skin graft wounds. Now, Mare Island was filled with Pearl Harbor burns, and we did lots of skin grafting. But then they didn't have regular surgeons that were good. They would have doctors that were specialized in skin grafting from San Francisco come mm-hmm. out to Mare Island, do the skin grafting.
So I'm just imagining what it must have been like to be you. You're 21 years old. You're halfway across the country from everything you've ever known or been around. You're going to be involved in these kind of surgeries that you've never seen or witnessed or been involved with before. And then there's all these guys, and you know what's happened to them. They were at Pearl Harbor. They were not killed, but pretty close to it.
That's right. And these boys, when they'd come into dirty surgery, see, they opened up the Japanese camps, and they sent their boys, and oh, the Japanese mistreated our boys. Oh, that, it took me years to like the Japanese after I got out of the service.
And this is going to be later on in your time when you get these returning prisoners of war. But at this time, with those Pearl Harbor survivors that you guys are treating, can you give us an example of what kind of injuries,
There was all kinds. There was bones. Now, they did a lot. Do you know what a revision for a stump? They'd take and they'd cut back the shrub to here and put a flap over it so they could put the prosthesis. Well, they had big prosthesis, and they made the prosthesis right there at Mare Island.
So manufacturing prosthetics for sailors who had lost limbs, lost legs, had just one leg.
Or an arm or so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have to do the revision for the arm or the leg or so forth. So that was one surgery. But you see, these corpsmen did the work.
You're there watching, observing, making sure it all goes right.
Yes.
Grabbing something if they need it.
Yeah. We didn't have very many nurses in surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And the corpsmen were good. They were young men that didn't make it into medical school. They joined the Navy, and then they were going to go back to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
But they were smart young people.
Did you interact at all with the patients?
I met this wonderful husband of mine. Where's the picture? Okay. My dear, charming husband had four left feet. He wasn't a good dancer.
And I've heard of two left feet, but not four left feet.
And he wasn't good at dancing. And so I would go to the officers' club, and I would dance with everybody else. And he'd sit on the with his buddies from SOQ. And
tell everyone what SOQ means.
Sick officer's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
See, he had been on an LSD, and the crane broke and knocked him 20 feet down the hatch and broke every bone in his left foot. So he was at Mare Island getting his left foot
mm-hmm.
cleaned up.
And he wasn't, you're calling him your husband now, my dear husband, but he was a stranger at this point. You didn't know who he was.
Well, I met him, but he was at SOQ and with all the gang.
Uh-huh.
Anyone in the service you agreed with.
Mm-hmm.
By that, you accepted him. So then we started dating.
What stood out about him? What made you think, yeah, this guy, of all the guys around here, because there's plenty of wounded soldiers here you could deal with.
He was very brilliant.
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 Uh-huh.
And I was very intrigued with his knowledge.
Looks like a pretty good-looking sailor there, too.
He was very good looking. Well, come on, so was I good looking.
And if you want proof, we'll put these pictures up at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. So I'm sorry to interrupt there. So you meet this young man, but he would never dance with you because of
the foot injury? He didn't dance well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was too busy dancing with everybody else.
I guess so.
Then we had a Halloween costume. And I went as a Tahitian girl, and I was in a Tahitian sarong, and I won first prize. I won a case of champagne, but I didn't get one bottle of the champagne. Everybody else drank it.
Uh-huh.
So anyway.
So this is obviously an important job, and for these guys who are being treated there at the hospital at Mare Island, it's life and death, but it sounds like you're having yourself a lot of fun.
Well, the thing of it was, everybody knew me because I was in surgery. I was a nurse from, because see, all of them would come to surgery for some type or other and so forth. And they'd meet me, and my mother couldn't take this when she came to mind. They'd meet you, and they'd take their stump, and they'd shake it in your face and say, "Hi, Miss Garrett, how are you today?" And
you just got used to that.
Well, you just, yeah.
Was it ever hard to see that? To see that these are guys that
No, you just got used to it. Well, to a lay person, it would be hard.
Mm-hmm.
My mother just couldn't take it.
Did you ever think about the burden that these guys were going to carry? Or it reflected?
How they were going to be accepted when they left the Navy. Mm-hmm. Because they were in their element. They were with other people with maybe both legs gone or an arm or both arms and so forth. I've often wondered how they made it. Because it was naturally hard on them.
Well, sure. And this, I mean, here's this war. I mean, 16 million Americans would end up serving. More than 400,000 died.
Yeah.
That's a heavy price. But the guys you worked with paid a really heavy price, too.
Oh, yes. And see, so many of mine were Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
They were the burns. And, the burns were bad. I just hated the Japanese.
Well, and you were not alone in that at that time. It's important for our listeners to note you use the past tense there. It's not how you feel now, but 70 years ago, you're seeing firsthand these devastating injuries suffered by men who had been the victims of Imperial Japan's surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. I'm sure we can all imagine that seeing sailors missing arms and legs from that day of infamy would stir up quite a few emotions. It's time to take our first break. If you'd like to see some photos of Peggy Bergthold from her Navy nurse days on Mare Island, check out the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also find some links to the fascinating history of Mare Island. The hospital she worked in is still standing. And there's a neat museum you can visit if you're ever in the vicinity of Vallejo, California. Check out those links online and keep it here because we'll discuss a little of the background of Mare Island when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 93-year-old Peggy Bergthold of Fresno, California, originally from Anadarko, Oklahoma. When she finished nursing school, her family encouraged her to join the Army, but she opted for the Navy instead, ending up in Northern California as a nurse at Mare Island Naval Hospital. Peggy was one of nearly 350,000 American women wearing a military uniform during World War II. Women found so many other ways to contribute as well, and in fact, you can learn a lot about that in Richmond, California, at the Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront National Historic Park. That's a bit of a mouthful, but it's a neat place to visit, and just about 15 miles north of there, you'll find Mare Island. I was thinking about this. You've heard me say a time or two that this program is called Hometown Heroes, because no matter where you live in our United States, no matter how big or how small your hometown is, there are always heroes around you, and we get a glimpse of history from one individual's point of view each week. We might discuss a little here or there about the unique aspects of a veteran's hometown, but when it comes to cities or locations themselves, sometimes the contributions are really staggering. And in researching the spot where Peggy served, Mare Island, I was struck by how much these 3.5 square miles of island, really a peninsula on the east side of San Francisco Bay, contributed during World War II and even long before that. We'll get back to Peggy's story in a minute, but indulge me for a second as I share a little Mare Island history. Perhaps you'll be as amazed as I am that this small parcel of land could have this monumental an impact. And the history goes back long before World War II. In fact, just 2 months after California became a state in 1850, President Millard Fillmore reserved Mare Island for military use. By 1854, Mare Island had become the first permanent U.S. naval installation on the West Coast. Dry docks were built there in the late 1800s. The first naval hospital there opened in 1864 during the Civil War, and they built a huge new one just a few years later. It would operate until 1898, when a big earthquake left it significantly damaged. So in 1901, they rebuilt the hospital on that original foundation, and that structure, over 100 years old, is still standing today. It's part of a private medical school on Mare Island now. When Peggy Bergthold was serving at the hospital during World War II, she was one of more than 40,000 military personnel working on that tiny peninsula. The hospital would earn its own acclaim, but the shipyards there are still legendary. From the Civil War on, Mare Island was building and repairing ships. During World War I, destroyers were the specialty. During World War II, it would become submarines. 22 subs that saw action in World War II were built at Mare Island, and that includes 5 of the top 7 submarines if you were to rank them for the damage they inflicted on the enemy. Mare Island remained an active naval installation until it was closed by the Clinton administration in 1996, and much of that long history is preserved today. Check out some links I have for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And let's listen more now to what Peggy Bergthold experienced there as a young nurse. You heard her talk about her work in the surgical rooms. The work done at Mare Island in providing prosthetics for injured sailors became quite well known at the time. People like Bob Hope and even Eleanor Roosevelt would come to visit the amputees at Mare Island. And those are some of the folks that Peggy was working with when she arrived in 1943. By the end of the war, it was a different group of war veterans who came to Mare Island with a different set of circumstances, every bit as ghastly.
We were still working in surgery when the concentration camps were open. Now, when was that?
1945.
Okay.
So these American prisoners who had been POWs in Japan, some of them for 3-4 years, they're released and sent back to the States, and they come to your hospital.
That's right. They were sent to Seattle, ours, and San Diego. They were divided. And then they'd come in, and all you'd see are these big, great big eyes. And I would whisper in their ear. Because, see, they had to be in dirty surgery.
And explain to us what dirty surgery means.
That means that they have gangrene or something like that. Or infection.
Which was pretty common in that population for what they'd been through. Malnourished, basically almost starved to death. Many of them did die in captivity. And if they were still alive, they had a lot of different conditions.
That's right. And I would look at them and these great big eyes would look up at you. And I'd say, you're safe now. You're home. And I'm going to take care of you. I can still remember. And they'd look at you and great big smile had come on their face.
What a privilege that must have been.
Well, not very many nurses have the opportunity of working with that. Because, you see, we don't have these kind of things. They don't have these kind of accidents. Only war brings this kind of accident.
Yeah. I know we're bouncing around a little bit here. But this goes on for a while. You joined the Navy in 1943. You're in till 46, so through the end of the war, when even though the war's over, there's still a lot of casualties that are recovering from the war. So you had 3 steady years of looking at these kind of injuries every day. You mentioned how it made you feel about the Japanese, but how did it make you feel about these men, the courage that they had, what they were made out of?
Oh, they were just... The thing of it was, I wasn't on the wards. So I didn't have to take care of them daily. I just took care of them in surgery. And they were there for such a short time that you didn't make much connection.
Just seeing them in those kind of states, was there an emotional response?
Well, what, at 21, how much emotion do you have?
Well, you had plenty of emotion when that one particular sailor came around. And you mentioned how you guys met, but how did you end up getting married? How did that unfold?
We were married at the chapel. This is a chapel in Mare Island.
Uh-huh.
In 1946.
How did he convince you?
Well, I don't know.
All he had to do was ask?
We dated for almost 2 years. He was a very, very... He had gone to Berkeley, and he was a very brilliant young man.
I don't want to be melodramatic here, but have you ever thought about how you met your husband?
Oh, sure.
And having your kids and grandkids, and then you realize, you know, if he hadn't been hurt on that LST, we never would have met?
That's right.
I'm sure, you know, he wasn't happy about getting hurt, and he had a long recovery from getting hurt.
No, but he was having there was about 4 young men. No, there were 3. There was Jimmy and Frank and Tojo. All of them had been injured, and they were at SOQ, and they had the best time because they'd go up to the club. Now, when my parents came to visit me at Mare Island, Frank acted as their host and would take them to the officers' club. It was a nice officers' club.
Well, but isn't that interesting? I mean, like I said, he didn't want to get injured. He wasn't hoping for that. I'm sure it was a hardship. I'm sure it affected him even after he went through all the treatment there at Mare Island. But if that doesn't happen to him, he never meets you, and your kids and grandkids are never born.
That's right.
What do you think was going on there? How do you add that up when you think about the odds of him getting hurt when he was hurt to be there at the time that you were there for you two to meet?
I've never thought of it. This is the first time you brought it up. I never thought of it. It's just that we met and we were married.
You started to talk about these prisoners of war who came back. So I know that the memories are clear in your mind, but a lot of people listening, this may be completely new territory for them. You mentioned the eyes bulging out because their bodies were in such shape. But can you describe for us the state that they were in, the physical condition and appearance that these people
were in? Oh, their bodies were just absolutely mutilated. They were so mistreated. And can you believe prisoners of war all that time? And so it was those of us in surgery that took care of them.
So they were kind of like walking skeletons,
mm-hmm.
maybe?
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be hard to see.
Well,
for you, it made you angry with the enemy.
Oh, very.
Mm-hmm.
Very. Now, another thing that I had, I was the youngest nurse in surgery. See, our surgery serviced the submarine base there at Mare Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take breakout maybe 2 and 3 times a night. I'd come home and I'd get a ring and there'd be another. And mostly it was appendectomies. Well, there was a surgeon there that was a neurologist. And neurology uses a lot of clips to go around. I didn't think that man was ever going to get to the peritoneum. So I walked over to the officer of the day, and I know that, because you knew everybody. I said, I think you better go see Dr. Edison. He'll never make that appendectomy. So he walked over, and his eyes looked at me. So he helped him get all these hemostats out of there and get down through the peritoneum to the appendectomy.
And
the funny part of this was the boy they were operating on, his eyes were as big as saucers.
What would your duties be when one of those surgeries is going on? On a day-to-day basis, describe for me the kinds of things you did and how you felt about it.
Well, the surgery, the thing that I did, the corpsman did all the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had dirty surgery, and I had 3 skin graft tables. So I circulated and made sure that everything went.
So you're making sure they have the right surgical tools?
Yes, and that surgeries were being carried out.
What would you do if something wasn't going according to plan? Or if you saw something that didn't seem quite right?
I'd take care of it.
Do you have any examples of that?
Well, it really didn't, because listen, these corpsmen, they were smart and they were cute.
Picture to prove it.
Yeah, picture to prove it.
How did you feel about what you were doing? Did you feel like it was important?
I never thought of that. Now, that's a question I never thought about. I didn't think I was important. I just did my job.
That's what they usually say.
Yeah. It wasn't until after we start thinking back over this do I realize how important it was.
What triggers that? What helps you understand that?
Well, I just think looking at pictures and things.
And what's it like now to think back and to realize of all these patients that came through Mare Island, guys that are missing limbs, that are going to have to live without a limb and do so with a 1945 prosthetic. I mean, it's not the same as what we have in 2015. Guys that are dealing with severe burns and are going to have these issues with their appearance or concerns about that, the psychological damage that they endured through the horrific things they experienced, to know that you were somehow helping them and making their future a little brighter.
But you know, the thing, I've thought of that long, long, many, many times, how they went back to their hometowns with all of these conditions.
And you probably wonder how they
and
how
they
made out.
Huh? How their parents accepted them.
How were they accepted there at Mare Island? How
were
they treated there?
We were all one. As I said, there were kids with stumps and there were kids with burns and so forth, and you just accepted them. They were all alike.
Mm-hmm. Here in Fresno, California, where you've lived for quite a while, if you go to the Veterans Administration Healthcare Center, the VA Medical Center, there's a big sign right over the door when you walk in, and it says, "The price of freedom is visible here."
Isn't that interesting? I've never been there.
Maybe you should go pay him a visit.
Yeah.
It might take you back down memory lane, because there are young men there right now that are dealing with some of the same kind of injuries as they come back from Iraq or Afghanistan. But when you hear that phrase, "The price of freedom is visible here." When you think back to those images that you can never get out of your mind of the shape that these brave young men were in, does that kind of sound like the price of freedom to you?
Well, the price is freedom for what we did to sacrifice to take care of them. And you must remember, as a 21-year-old gal, I don't think I was very philosophical.
Yeah, you're not walking around thinking deeply all the time. You're out there having a good time and wearing your Navy uniform and dancing with all the boys and meeting a husband.
Yeah.
But now you're 93 and you know the history and you know where America was then and where it still is now. So.
Oh, I would hate to see us get in a war.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to see us get in a war.
It's break time again. Remember to check out photos of Peggy then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. When we come back, we'll find out what the end of World War II meant to Peggy and also hear a little about what she experienced on a recent honor flight to visit the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.
50 years ago, a war began that would change our nation and the lives of all involved.
One of our C-47s went down behind enemy lines. We will go in there and bring them home.
A father's mission then.
You're more than welcome to read my Bible.
Jesus loves you.
Would lead two men on a future journey.
We're driving to D.C. to see our father's name on the Vietnam Wall.
The answers I'm looking for in D.C., but they're not names on a wall.
To find the truth that had been hidden for years.
You know, I have no idea how my dad died.
From the studio that brought you God's Not Dead, Faith of Our Fathers, starring Stephen Baldwin, Kevin Downs, David A.R. White, with Cy Robertson and Candace Cameron Bure.
Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends.
Faith of Our Fathers, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. Find a theater at faithofourfathersmovie.com.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with World War II Navy nurse Peggy Bergthold. From 1943 to 46, she served at Mare Island Naval Hospital in California's Bay Area. She was involved in operations with burn victims and amputees who survived the Pearl Harbor attacks. Later, she witnessed American POWs who had been liberated from captivity in Japan. We've heard some of those memories and gotten a taste of her youthful personality. Check out some photos of Peggy then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and let's get back to her story right now.
Do you remember what it was like where you were when World War II ended, when the news came that Japan had surrendered?
Yes. I remember San Francisco went wild.
Did you join in all that fun? I've heard stories of soldiers having nurses to kiss in the middle of San Francisco on Market Street.
They sure did, but I wasn't one of them.
Well, I'll take your word for it until somebody shows me photographic evidence to the contrary. Was that a big deal to you? Did that mean something? I mean, here you had been in these surgeries with so many of these guys whose lives were changed by this war, and the country was changed by this war, and now it's finally over. Was that a big deal?
Well, I was just elated that it was over, that we wouldn't be having any more of these boys, injured boys, come in for our surgery and everything.
Until they brought in all those ex-prisoners of war from Japan.
That was rough.
What could you guys do for them to make things a little better?
Well, they had to come in, and their entire body had to be washed because they were full of the disease. Mm-hmm. And I have seen strong surgeons weep how mistreated our boys were.
Just to see a human being in that condition.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty long road to recovery for those guys, wasn't it?
Yeah. But you see, they could stay at Mare Island indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. Probably one of the biggest things they needed was some real food.
Yes, and nourishment.
Slow process.
Yes.
And you shared with us, and I think that was real powerful. It wasn't a long, drawn-out sentiment that you shared with them. It was pretty straightforward and simple, but it seemed like that might have a lot of value for you. Did you realize what you were saying when you told them, you're home now, you're going to be okay, I'm here to help?
I think that my religion and my faith, even though I was in the Navy, I never gave up my faith. And I went to chapel every Sunday and everything. I think that's what promoted me to let the boy know that someone loved him. And I'm here to take care of you.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it almost sounds like you got as much out of that as they did.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And you just can't believe their bodies. Anyway, that was a long time ago.
It was. And you stayed in the Navy past the end of World War II. And you were discharged in 1946. Was that bittersweet to leave the Navy after all the excitement you'd had?
Oh, no. I was married and I was happy to get along for it to be a married life.
Real life. The war's over. Life can go on again.
Yes. Yes.
Can you help us understand how uncertain that was for those couple of years? Because people now, I mean, just the idea of our world, it's almost a given. It's taken for granted. But I imagine while this war's going on, I mean, your future seemed pretty uncertain.
Oh, sure.
What kept you going? What kept you motivated to do what you were doing?
Oh, I think, see these young men?
Mm-hmm. These are the corpsmen you worked with?
They were the corpsmen. And they were all very, very brilliant. And they treated me like a queen. We'd have breakout, and they'd call me and say, Miss Gert. So they would go over to the officer of the day, pick up the key, and they'd get started because they were well-trained. And then I would come along and supervise them.
You said a moment ago that your faith, your beliefs motivated your desire to comfort these men as they came home.
Yeah.
I'm sure, I mean, if we can put ourselves in their shoes, talk about an uncertain future when you don't know if you're missing an arm or a leg or you're emaciated from being a prisoner of war, you've been tortured, whatever. There's probably a lot of concern or uncertainty in your mind, and here you are providing that comfort. So you said your faith colored that perspective. What about that question I asked you a little bit ago? The fact that here, out of all the wounded sailors at this hospital, you meet a guy who becomes your husband and the father of your children, and all these things that have happened. Is that something where you look back at your beliefs too and say,
well,
God was pulling some strings?
Well, I just wondered how I. It's fun. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like something to be thankful for.
Oh, well, I'm thankful for him. I'm sorry he left us so soon.
You're not in a hurry to follow that example, though.
No, I'm not ready to go yet.
You know, in all honesty, what is the secret to your youthfulness? I mean, you're 93 years old. People can hear your voice. They can hear your spunk coming through the radio here. Where does that come from?
Well, I don't know.
You always been that way?
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe yourself?
Ornery.
You said it, not me.
Henry.
Let's talk about Honor Flight.
Oh, that was the time. That was the best time. See my picture up there?
You've got your picture right on the wall here, a group picture of all the veterans that went on a Central Valley Honor Flight to Washington, D.C. In June of 2015. And you're one of, what, five women on that flight?
Yeah.
Five female veterans.
And listen, when they came into the airport, mm-hmm. You have never, there was two lines, one on each side of Labor I have never seen such a reception.
So what you're talking about, you're with all these World War II veterans and some Korean War veterans, but you return from all this experience in Washington, D.C., and waiting for you in the secure corridor of the Fresno Yosemite International Airport are uniformed, active-duty Navy sailors.
I never saw so many. They were all lined up along the...
And what were they doing?
And then wasn't there a drum and bugle?
Yeah, the bagpipes leading
the bagpipes.
Through. But these sailors were all saluting
they
you.
Were all, yes.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, like I was the president.
Maybe you should be.
Oh, well, come on now.
Should we ask you what decisions you'd make if you were in the White House?
I'd feel sorry for our nation.
If you were president?
Yes.
But so for this honor flight, now that's the way home. You get out there to Washington, D.C. What kinds of things did you experience that are sticking with you that when you look at that picture on the wall, it comes back to mind?
Oh, the honor team, the changing of the guard.
At the Tomb of the Unknowns?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. And then I couldn't believe when we were at the National Cemetery how many graves there are. Mm. And Paul, you can't go there without a tear in your eye. It was very impressive to me.
What did you think of that National World War II Memorial where you see the gold stars representing 400,000
Americans?
Oh,
I thought that was wonderful. And I also thought the Korean.
And what was it like to share that experience with your daughter and with all these other veterans?
Well, she's not a veteran, but she got as much impression of it as I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was very, very interested in it.
One of the things that you mentioned, the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknowns, but on that same trip while you're at Arlington National Cemetery, in a corner of that complex, there is the Women's Museum.
Yes, and I took my picture in, and I took my registration, and as I walked in to give her my registration and my picture, the lady said, "Ooh, this is cute. I'm going to put it up right now." I said, I'm 93 now. Just think how many years ago that was. She says, "I don't care." So she put my picture up.
Yeah, so they have a screen there, and any woman who served in World War II in the military, they'll put that military era photo up on display.
Yes.
At the Museum Women in Military Service for America.
Yes.
And is that kind of neat? Does that mean something to you that they have a museum there honoring specifically the women who served? Because a lot of people don't even realize women served in World War II.
Well, I thought it was wonderful because we gave our time. But I haven't felt as honored as I have lately for people that are bringing it back to you.
Mm-hmm. Does that make you feel like you did something that mattered?
Uh-huh.
Because you probably forgot about it or didn't think about it all that often as you're moving on with life and you're raising kids.
Yes, no.
But you did some pretty incredible things when you were in your 20s, didn't you?
Yes. And the thing of it was, I was thinking the other day, I left home, Oklahoma, and came all the way out here. Can you believe how young I was?
Yeah, it's amazing you made it all the way here, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you're still going.
And I'm still here.
And you have children and grandchildren who I know appreciate you, but they weren't alive during World War II. They didn't experience it the way you did or your late husband did.
Yeah.
What do you think is important for those of us who weren't born yet, who didn't live through that time in our nation's history, to know about that period and the men and women who kept our nation free and really saved the world?
That we played a more important role than you realized.
I mean, this is 70 years ago. Women had never been this involved in the American military, but the magnitude of World War II and the multiple fronts required manpower, and a lot of the recruiting push was, women, come do this job so a man doesn't have to and he can go overseas and risk his life. But until that point, women in the military, I mean, that wasn't something that was common or thought of. Now it's very commonplace. Women have opportunities today that they wouldn't have had if you and your generation of women didn't do what you did. Does that give you a sense of pride that you were some kind of trailblazer?
Well, I never thought of it. We just did what we were, and while we were doing it, we had a good time.
I get the feeling there isn't much you do where you don't have a good time. What was the most satisfying part of your duties during World War II?
Well, having the honor to work with all these young men. To be accepted and being able to do the job I did at Mare Island. Because, you see, in surgery at Mare Island, there weren't more than three nurses. The rest of them were all corpsmen.
So not too many people got to experience what you experienced.
Yeah, to work with the corpsmen. We might do maybe two or three appendectomies a night. And it was a submarine base. We'd have a lot of surgeries that would come in and out of Maryland.
Right. And as far as the combat casualties that came in, it's one thing if you've got one or two. Can you give us some perspective on how many there were? I mean, are you just seeing waves and waves of guys in these similar conditions? Are we talking hundreds of patients that are undergoing operations?
Oh, there were, I would say three wards failed of burn cases. Each ward would have their own doctor. And then when they'd come to surgery, we'd do the surgery, and then they'd go back.
Did you get a sense for how big a difference those surgeries could make in these guys' lives?
Oh, what would happen to them if they didn't have it? Because when you get these burn cases, they were bad. Oh, it's tragic.
You're seeing burns on faces, on sometimes probably entire bodies that are
yes,
burned?
Yes, and legs and arms and so forth.
So with these skin grafts and then with some of the other injuries, the prosthetics, you're really having a life-changing impact. Have you ever wondered what became of some of those patients?
Oh, many times, especially when I see all of us lined up in that picture, wonder what happened to those sweet boys.
And in a way, that picture, you're talking about the picture of this honor flight where you've got 60 male veterans and 5 female veterans. You look at that picture and those aren't the actual patients, but they might as well have been.
They could have been.
Yeah.
They could have been. Oh, that honor flight was wonderful. Oh, don't you think they do a good job?
Mm-hmm. I'm a little biased, but absolutely.
You're a little biased.
Well, I want to say thank you for serving our country. I'm sure when you were on the honor flight, you had a lot of people thanking you for your service.
Listen, when we'd come through the line, everybody wanted to shake hands with you.
How did that make you feel?
Like I was the president.
We got to get your campaign together.
Yes.
That's the second time you mentioned that. One of the things that impresses me the most about the Honor Flight experience, it's not all the things that we plan for you that we know that are going to happen, but it's the things we can't plan. Did you have some random circumstances while you're in Washington, D.C. that touched you, that made you feel special?
Oh, they came up out of the blue every place.
Everywhere you went?
Every place we went. Everyone wanted to shake hands with you. Thank you for our service.
And what about when you were flying home before you got that welcome? And I know those sailors, especially as a Navy nurse, to see those sailors in uniform saluting you when you landed was big, and the big crowd and all the cheers. But did you open some interesting mail on the way home?
Oh, I got so much mail that it was absolutely wonderful. She called all the bridge club and everybody.
So all your relatives, all your friends, they all must have thought you were something special.
And the bridge club.
You must not be winning enough. Because if you're winning all the time, they wouldn't like you that much.
Oh,
what did that mean to you?
Oh, those letters meant everything. They were wonderful. I highly recommend it.
Well, you know, you're not going to get an argument from me, and not from EECU either. Peggy, like every veteran on Hometown Heroes, will receive CD copies of the program thanks to the sponsorship of Educational Employees Credit Union. And EECU has also been a founding and sustaining sponsor of Central Valley Honor Flight, the one that took Peggy to Washington, D.C. So thanks, EECU. Thanks, Peggy Bergthold. And thank you for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.